Coming up on your favorite podcast, it's the special U.S. Open edition post-game pod between Ty and I. We talk a little bit about the great finish at the U.S. Open today at Torrey Pines. John Rahm, an incredible finish, right? Two big putts at 17-18. Can't wait to talk about that. We'll also talk a lot about the guys who fell apart at the end, and pretty much everybody else did. So, a lot to talk about. The golf course, the coverage, everything. Should be a great podcast. Ty and I are here for the next 35-40 minutes here today. Hope you enjoy it. It is the U.S. Open post-game pod, and it's coming up next. Hey, it is the Tim Anderson Podcast. I'm Tim, and my buddy Ty, hanging out at home, just got the kids down for bed. Had to have been a hellacious Father's Day for you. Ty, it's good to have you here again.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, it was a really good Father's Day, and I actually played golf, so we can touch on that.
What? You played golf? Son of a gun, so did I. How did your golf game go?
Really well.
Oh, did we find a little something-something?
We did, yeah. We found a little semblance of something. It wasn't as if I turned it around, but I figured something out. Something a little differently, I guess. I didn't figure out what I thought, I didn't fix what I thought I needed to fix, but just tried changing something up, and I played Pebble out in Becker, and it was, played really well.
Yeah, Pebble Creek, beautiful golf course out there. It's really nice. We played it the one time, but I think I played it one other time besides that. It's a great course. I got to get back out there.
Yeah, it was in great shape.
Yeah, I had to rock the ponds before the rainstorm came in today, and was able to get that done. Played in the rain the last 5-6 holes. Battled to a little 80. Just didn't putt today. It's just I can't put it all together. But I think I made a breakthrough on the irons. We'll talk about that on next week's podcast, because I know we like to save a little time for that to get into our own personal games at that time. But we watched the U.S. Open. I'm assuming you caught quite a bit of this afternoon and all the last 4 days like I did. John Rahm wins the United States Open, for those of you just joining or just tuning in. John Rahm gets it done. A really terrific back nine from Rahm, but a really solid last two holes specifically. He shoots 67, and he wins the U.S. Open. Your thoughts?
Yeah, there's going to come a time in this podcast that I'm going to contradict myself a little bit, because I'm going to say that John Rahm went and got it, and I'm going to say Louis Oosthuizen lost it. So apparently two things can be true at once. Congratulations to John Rahm. I was happy to see him bounce back after the conundrum at the Memorial. Not a guy that I've traditionally cheered a lot for, but he certainly is deserving to be a major champion, and I was rooting for him on the back nine today, no doubt.
I guess what I had to appreciate about Rahm is, and that's true, I'm with you. I don't know if I have always been a Rahm guy, but I must say, I thought he handled the Memorial thing really well. Like, to his credit, he could have been Mr. Sour Grapes. He could have been whatever, and he was not. I thought he really handled it well. Give a lot of credit to him about that. But two, I just felt like for the first time all season, for the first time in the last couple of seasons, I felt like somebody showed some guts late in a golf tournament and won it. Went out and won the darn thing. And I feel like it's only happened a couple of times in the last few years. I felt like Morikawa at the PGA at Harding Park went and got it. And then I felt like, that's really about it. Because I don't even think Matsuyama went and got it at the Masters. He held on for dear life and he was able to win it. And Phil was able to hold on for dear life. But Phil hit a couple of really quality shots when he had to, but to make a putt like Rahm did on 17 and 18 to go and take it, that's the kind of guts I've been looking for in a golfer in a long time, and we finally saw some of that.
Yeah, that's part of what I don't like about Rahm, or haven't liked about Rahm in the past, is that he could be a little bit too emotional, and he tends to slam clubs and throw clubs and pout and really let his game get turned around when he's not playing well. But we saw the other side of it today. We saw the positive energy when he made those putts. So he's an emotional guy. I don't know that you can really change that about a person. And I really appreciated it. So it helps me appreciate the other side of it. And yeah, it was fun to watch. I'm really glad that it wasn't a bunch of tap-in pars that won this tournament, which that can be the case when the winning score is six under. You might go shoot five under the first day, and then you can shoot pretty much even par the next three. And it wasn't that. There was a lot of ebbs and flows of this round. I was starting to think that a lot of people wanted to go get it, and then I started to think that nobody wanted it, and then John Rahm came through at the end and just took it.
It
So.
was. I did think that the same thing. I think you and I sent texts to each other at about the midway point of this final round today, where it was like, "Well, here come all these superstars rising to the top as Henley faded, Mackenzie Hughes faded, and some of these guys kind of dropped down the leaderboard." And it's like, "Well, here they all are. All the big names are right there." But one by one, all the big names fell off. All the pressure or whatever it was, they succumbed to it on the back nine. And it brought back my text to you that I said. I was like, man, there's just not a closer in the bunch. There's just not. And to Rahm's credit, Rahm closed today. And I'm still there's still not a lot of closers on tour, but at least Rahm can say he has closed one big one. And that buys him a lot of street cred in my world.
Yeah, Rahm wasn't on my radar today, only because we just haven't seen him do it. So the fact that he's done it now, this happens a lot with guys, is that they kind of are the runner up a number of times, and then they win one, and then they go on a run. So we'll see if he can have a Brooks Koepka like run on majors. If he can, you could really turn around his legacy in a hurry.
Well, he's young, right? So he was one of those guys that I don't think any of us were ready to give up on, because he had won some tournaments, but we've been waiting for like the big breakthrough, the signature win. And everybody was like, well, he would have got it at Memorial. And again, I would agree, but we've been waiting on this major. Like, you can win Torrey Pines, you can win the Farmers Insurance and the BMW, and that's great. But you got to get a major done if you want to be a big-time guy in this thing. And Rahm wants to be the number one player in the world. In fact, he retakes number one player in the world with this win today. When you're the number one player in the world, you contend and win major championships.
Yeah, that's another part of this that I'm excited about, is finally we have a number one player in the world who's on top of their game. I was sick of hearing Dustin Johnson's name when he – and he played okay this week, but – really never made a charge at winning, and he just really hasn't lately. So it's, yeah, I think Rahm could hold on to this thing for a little while. It just depends. Sometimes when guys win majors, they tend to take a few weeks off, and that can hurt the world golf ranking if he's has a slim lead. But yeah, he could take this thing and run with it. He certainly has the potential. He has the game. I'm really happy for him.
Top five in the tournament this week. It goes Rahm wins it. He shoots six under par. Louis Oosthuizen takes second. Harris English, which, by the way, I was so worried about this. Harris English posted three under as all these guys started falling backwards. And I'm like, if Harris English backdoors this to a playoff or to a win, I'm going to throw up. Because that is inexcusable. But he ends up getting a third place finish out of this after, I don't think I saw Harris English hit one shot this week. Except for the putt. He had a putt on 17, which got him kind of into the mix here. But that might have been the first shot I've seen him hit all week long, and he takes third place.
Yeah, you don't see that happen too often where someone finishes up, an hour and a half before the final group and wins a major. So that would have been something. I don't think that would have been good for ratings in any way, shape, or form. Not just because it's Harris English, but again, it was someone that wasn't on the radar of the tournament. And I was going to say the same exact thing. I don't even remember the putt on 17. I remember him tapping it on 18 and them showing that he was the clubhouse leader. That was my exposure to Harris English this week.
What does it say to you that Harris English is the highest finishing American player in this tournament?
I don't think it means a ton, just because I think there were a good amount of American players who played really well, aside from the back and just kind of fell off. I mean, I have to give these guys a little bit of credit because I do think that they were playing to win, right? A guy like Brooks Koepka, he was playing to win on the back.
Yep.
Bryson DeChambeau, as much as we'll talk about him, but he was playing to win. Matthew Wolff was playing to win. There was a lot. Xander Schauffele was playing to win. A lot of those American guys were playing to win, and you know, those guys who go out earlier have the luxury of they don't really have to scoreboard watch a whole lot. A lot of times, I think they just set a number in their head. They know they don't have much of a chance to win.
Right.
It's a different. That's why they don't tend to win a lot, because they just set a number. They say, "Hey, I'm going to go out and try to shoot 68 today," and that's what Harris English did. So good for him. But I don't think I'm not going to read too much into the fact that he's the top finishing American, because again, it wasn't as if the top 10 all week was you know, European and Asian tour guys. It was the Americans played pretty well.
Rounding out the top five, Guido Migliozzi, who ends up earning a Masters bid and a trip back to Brookline next year for basically a European Tour regular. For him to qualify his way in here and play as well as he did, hats off to some of these Euro guys who came over. Richard Bland was the 36-hole leader in this tournament. A lot of European Tour guys played really, really well here. So good job for Guido. Brooks Koepka takes fifth along with Morikawa. Brandon Grace, who posted the early clubhouse lead, finishes one under, as does Daniel Berger, Paul Casey, Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler, and Rory McIlroy all finish under par, one under par, with Francesco Molinari finishing at even with Russell Henley, who just fell apart today, shot five over par, was not in the mix. So that's your top 10, all the guys who finished par or better in this tournament. Where do you want to start here? Obviously, that's a pretty nice list, but who do you want to talk about first after we've talked about Rom now? Who do we got to get into?
Let's go to the second place finisher, and he seemed hell-bent on finishing second place, unfortunately.
Yeah.
We may differ on opinion here, but and obviously it all comes down to missing the fairway on 17 and 18, but I just thought Louis Oosthuizen, I wasn't a big fan of laying up and saying that my best chance is to dunk it. I know that's a tough bunker shot from that right bunker, and obviously you're flirting with the water, and I just thought it was a very casual play for someone who has finished runner-up six times. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I say go for it. Try to hit the shot of your life. I just don't think you're going to dunk it from 80, 90 yards out very often.
Yeah, that play to me, and look, I love Louis. I think Louis's got one of the three or four best swings on tour. And he seems to play well in tough tournaments. And I give him all the credit in the world. Whenever there's a major, you have to think Louis's going to be around. Like, that's just the way it is. But Louis strikes me as a guy who he could win it, he could lose it, and he's cool either way. But I think he looked at it and said, well, I definitely don't want to give up second, because second gets me, $800,000 rather than $400,000. And I think he's one of those guys that plays golf for money and doesn't play golf to win. And I think he's cool with six second place finishes, like in major championships. Like, he's cool with it, as opposed to, some guys that chap their ass. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's indicative of Louis, and I think it's indicative of a lot of guys that are just happy to keep cards on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I do have to go back just for a second. Something I wanted to mention. I be a little bit critical of myself. On the last podcast, I stated that, for one, I stated that I didn't think Rahm was in a position to win. I thought he was going to come home and play poorly. And I also thought that we would look back and say the winner was one of those guys we see who we consider to be very mentally strong. And if you had asked me at that time, who's the least mentally strong person on tour right now that's has a chance to win this thing, I probably would have said Jon Rahm. Louis Oosthuizen, he's one of those guys that I probably would say is mentally strong, but I think you're right. I just don't get the feeling that Louis Oosthuizen is the most competitive guy in the world. And he probably does play for money. I mean, they were saying on the broadcast that he just bought a new ranch, so maybe now he can put a nice down payment on that thing.
I'm guessing he paid cash for that. Do you think he's paying a mortgage over there at Golden Ocala? I just
I
don't
don't know.
think, yeah, Rom to me, I mean, not Rom, but Louis just seems like a good player that likes to play golf because he gets a lot of money at it. But I don't think it's everything to him. I don't think it's his whole life. I think he has other things that he likes to do. And he's cool cashing second place checks. Like, he's just cool with it. And I mean, that's fine, mm-hmm. but that means don't bet on him to win. Like, you just can't do it.
Yeah. And I think that another reason why I'm not upset about the Americans falling back on the back nine is because you're going to remember the second place finishes. And there's obviously, we always hear the second place finish statistics for these guys like Xander Schauffele and Phil Mickelson and Louis Oosthuizen. But I just don't think that the American guys that fell off care about second place finishes. Those guys were going for the win. Hats off to Louis. He was my pick to win going into the day. And he played just well enough to cash that second place check. So that's all I got on Louis.
Yeah. You know, he didn't do a Russell Henley. He didn't do a Mackenzie Hughes. He didn't shoot 78, and he played pretty solid golf, but that's just it. It was solid golf. He made those couple of birdies to get it to 6 under par, and you thought, well, maybe Louis's feeling a little frisky here and maybe he wants to win it. But after that, you just felt like Louis didn't play aggressively the rest of the way. Like, you just felt like it was like, let me just try to center the green. Let me try to 2-putt par, which usually it's not bad. That's not a bad thing to do in the Open. It's really not. It's good strategy. But when you see Rahm make two and now you're chasing, you gotta switch gears, right? You have to. He posted 6 under and you still had 3 holes in your pocket. You had 3 holes to play. So you say to yourself, all right, I'm going to get one at 18, but I want to get one at 17 or 16 so that I can win this tournament outright on 18. And you just never saw that happen. Like, and especially at 18, I just felt, I agree with you. The fact that he just didn't go for it and said, you know what, if I miss this shot, I'm going to take a T5, but if I hit this shot, I got a chance to force a playoff. The fact that he didn't do that tells you that it was more about, hey, second place is pretty darn good around here. And it is. Like I said, I'm not trying to disrespect it, but it just speaks to the attitude of the tour. And I disagree. There's a lot of America. I think you've got to be I think here's a bold prediction right now. The Europeans are going to roll the Americans at the Ryder Cup this year. They are going to roll the Americans by 4 to 5 points. There is nothing you can take away from this tournament or anything we've seen so far from the American players that makes you think we've got a bunch of mentally strong, tough dudes here. We just don't. We just don't have any. Koepka, I mean, might be mentally strong, but I thought Koepka faded, pretty hard today. And Bryson, I mean, the wheels just came off. And they can't come off like that if you are one of the 4 best players in the world. You can't shoot back 944s. You can't do it. That's Tim Anderson back 9 stuff. Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, it wasn't great. That chip he hit on, what was the hole he made the 8? Was it 17?
16 or 17, yeah.
Yeah, so 16 is a par 3, so it was 17. I mean, that made him seem very human, very pedestrian. It was kind of fun to watch. I go back and forth on Bryson. I was rooting for him at one point today. I always root for him to be in the mix, as I've stated in the past, because he's an entertaining guy. Like, no one can deny that he's an entertaining guy.
No question. No question.
His game is as entertaining as anyone.
I agree.
The implosion on 17. I really did. I'm getting a little bit sick of, I'm all for picking up distance, but I'm getting sick of the strategy. And I just think, I think there's a lot of holes in the strategy, because like you and I were texting and you said, well, he just basically said, I don't care about fairways. I'll just hit the ball as far as I can. Well, it doesn't work in a tournament like this. And that doesn't work at a lot of courses, and we're finding that out, where he's not really even in the mix. And you also have to be able to hit your wedges really well if that's going to be your strategy. And I'm not convinced that he can do that on a consistent basis. But you have to have a different strategy at a U.S. Open when the rough is knee high. I mean, and not literally, but I mean, this rough was damning, right? It was in many cases a one-stroke penalty. And I just didn't see any strategy from him. I didn't hear about it throughout the week, and I didn't see it. It just seemed like the same Bryson. I'm playing at a course where being in the rough is not a big deal. And that's not the case. That's why the winning score was 600. And it's hard to argue too much when he was in a position to win, halfway through his round today. But it's getting a little old to me. It really is.
Well, look, he got to the lead with the back nine to go. But we all talk about this all the time, that the tournament doesn't even start till the back nine on Sunday. We always say that about major championships. You can put yourself there, but like we watched Rory make an 80 at Augusta when he had the lead on a back nine on Sunday. And some would argue, I mean, Rory ended up winning four majors after that. But it's just proof that it can go off the rails very quickly. The back nine strategy has to be sound. You gotta have, I mean, you gotta be aggressive, but you gotta be sound in your strategy. And you know, at the US Open, just occasionally find a fairway, pull a three wood out, hit a driving iron, especially after 13. You know, he makes the big number at 13. He goes bogey, bogey, double, and he's basically out of the mix at that point, and the quad ends up taking him out completely. But he's got a chance at this point. Okay, you get to the par five. You say to yourself, all right, I've just bogeyed two holes in a row by spraying it right. The one thing I can't do here is spray it right. Just let's hit a fairway. I'm plenty strong enough. My three wood goes 300 yards. I'm going to hit a three wood. I'm going to find the fairway. I'm going to take a chance and run maybe even another three wood or a driving iron up to the front of the green. I'm going to chip it close and I'm going to make birdie. Like, that's where you take advantage of your length. To me, like, Tiger had the length advantage in the 90s and 2000s because everybody's like, well, Tiger does this stuff. If you watch Tiger play US Open golf, Tiger oftentimes dialed back, hit an iron off a tee, hit a three wood off a tee. When he had to fish it out of the rough, he took his medicine, hit it as far as he could, but he didn't try to do too much. In fact, a lot of times on Sundays, Tiger played a boring golf. Tiger played a lot of fairways, greens, two putts, get out. Played a lot of that. Bryson today was swinging out of his shoes from 13 on, and you're like, there's no way that's going to the fairway with that swing.
Yeah, here's an issue I have with Bryson's game beyond the driver. Again, like you said, I saw one low stinger he hit off a tee yesterday. I didn't see any of that today. It was bombs away off every tee that I saw. So the issue with his strategy is they were talking to him earlier in the week and they asked Bryson, he loves these questions. How far do you hit your 8 iron? Well, I hit my 8 iron about 200 or 220 if I really step on it. So that's not natural. That's not like if you and I really wanted to step on our irons and hit it two clubs further, we could, right? But there's no advantage to that. Those clubs aren't meant to go that distance. And you're not meant to juice yourself up before you're hitting your 8 iron. So I understand the driver getting yourself out there 30 yards further so you can hit a lesser club. But if you're standing over a 200-yard shot, what's the advantage of hitting an 8 iron, juicing yourself up, swinging as hard as you can, and hitting the ball a mile in the air? There's just too many variables there. What's the harm? I just don't see what the advantage is versus hitting a smooth 7 or a smooth 6. I don't understand it. The advantage is not using a lesser club. It's having less distance, and being able to use that less club because it's less distance, not because you can juice yourself up and hit the ball farther. I don't understand that strategy, and it's not appearing to work. He's not, I don't know. He can hit good shots at times. I mean, shots that are just as any player, but he just has too many misses where he's missing greens, he's hitting it over greens, and that's just not a great strategy.
100% agree here. I just want to see Bryson find the balance, right? I have no problem with you being a bomber, right? But if you watch Koepka and DJ, like they hit the ball a ton, but they know how to well, maybe not today from those two guys because they didn't play great today. But I think the reason why Brooks Koepka has four majors and why he's always around in major championships is because he plays a good major championship style of golf. He hits it far, but he's also not leaving himself short-sighted. not often anyway. Today he did. Today was a rare Brooks like fade. Like Brooks really struggled today, but like most of the time Brooks gets it in the fairway, hits that little cut off the tee, and he'll play with a driving iron occasionally. He'll hit a 3-wood off a tee. It doesn't have to be a driver every time, and he'll hit a little cut 8-iron into a green or a cut 7 or something into the green where he can get some spin and some loft and understands that, like, ooh, short-siding myself left, bad idea. I need to go to the fatter part over here. Like, there's strategy still to watching DJ and Brooks Koepka, and they hit it a ton. Same with Rory. Bryson, there's no strategy. And especially when it comes off the rails like it did, and you are already listened to him say some things after the round, like, I just got a lot of bad breaks. A lot of bad breaks in the fairway. It's like, well, no, you didn't get bad breaks. When you hit the ball into the thick rough, you're taking your chances. Like, that's what you're doing. The fairway, there's no bad breaks. Go ahead and hit the fairway, and you'll have plenty of opportunities to spin a wedge in, to spin a 9-iron in, but you're never going to spin it out of 3-foot rough. It's never going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you think that the better strategy would be if I can hit my 8-iron 200, just get that fairway finder with your 3-wood or just a smooth driver? You're telling me that this guy can't stand up and hit a driver 305 down the middle of the fairway 90% of the time. I bet he could.
Yeah.
But he doesn't care to. He wants to dazzle. He wants to reinvent the game. And, like, you know, that was a good comparison because Brooks Koepka, there's a ton of strategy in what Brooks Koepka does. And as much as he can be kind of a pompous guy, he's not too proud to come out with a boring strategy that gets him in a place to win on Sunday. He's done more often than not.
How much of today was Bryson trying to one-up this thing? Like, to say, like, my strategy works and I'm going to win with it, and all the haters, all the Brooksies, all of that stuff goes away. How much of him on the back nine was, and then when it started to slip away, him just being like, nope, got to press even harder, got to step on the gas even further rather than take a step back. How much of it was this kind of toxic masculinity that sort of did him in here today?
I don't know specifically about the back nine, but that's Bryson, right? I'd love to have the ability to go back in time, go back to USAM days where he's winning the USAM and say, okay, let's just use your skill, right? Let's no gimmicks. Don't try to reinvent the game. Let's just see how good Bryson DeChambeau is. And at one point, I think after he won the U.S. Open last year, people said, well, he was right. He did it, and he won his major. Well, who knows if he doesn't win that major anyway? Who knows if he doesn't have two majors? Maybe he has zero. I don't know. But I'd love to know, because right now I don't know that that's in depth. I don't know that that's totally clear. Where would he be without these weird strategies? So, yeah, I'm a little bit lost on him. I try not to look too much into one tournament, especially one, you know, backside 9-hole stretch of golf. But it's hard not to, because I think we learned a lot that again, he's trying so hard to prove that he's right. And I'm not totally sure he is.
It was, I just think, like, it was a pretty damning back nine. Like, it just was really tough to make the turn with the lead and finish tied 26th. That's tough. That is a tough one to look at. A couple more guys that I just want to get your opinion on before we talk a little bit about maybe the golf course and then wrap up this little post-game pod. Your thoughts on... We talked a little bit about Koepka, so we won't spend a lot of time on that. But how about Rory McIlroy? He makes a little run, gets himself in the mix. In fact, at one point, he's tied for the lead. And then another kind of patented Rory McIlroy, I can't make a putt in the last 9 holes of a golf tournament, happened again. And we're now 7 years on from Rory winning his last major. Where are we at with Rory?
I could have told you a little bit better earlier in the week when we were talking smack about him, saying he had no chance. But he tends to do these things. He tends to pop up and give you a little bit of hope and thinking, oh, maybe this is different Rory, but yeah, it's really the same song and dance. And if you do look back to when he was winning his majors, he was winning them pretty handedly. So he was going out and playing well enough before he had to make a big putt. Not that he's never made a big putt, he has, but you know, he was winning his majors by multiple strokes. So on the back, he could just play for par, and he didn't have to make any big putts. So that's one thing that if he can get back to that Rory where he just wins by 4 or 5 strokes and he doesn't have to worry about being clutch, I just don't know that that's realistic with all the talent that's out there right now, especially on the younger side of things. But yeah, I think it was a positive week for him. I don't see how you'd say it wasn't. But again, falling short and wasn't too close at the end. So
yeah, that's just it. It's a positive week for Rory because he hasn't played phenomenal this year. So it's a positive week, you know, to be in the mix, to be around, to play pretty decent golf. You certainly got to think going over towards Royal St. George's in 4 weeks' time, he's going to be really solid and be ready to go. But yeah, I'm concerned that maybe we've seen Rory's best and that there may not be another chapter on this. Like, I hope I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. Because I think Rory's good for the game. And when Rory's playing good golf, I think that's good for golf. Because Rory's a superstar, and people know Rory, and they like Rory. And Rory's an easy guy to root for. And I love the fact that he leads this player coalition. And on the PGA Tour, they stepped forward this week. We'll talk about this next week on the pod. But they stepped forward to outlaw green reading books before the PGA of America, before the USGA, before the RNA. And that's Rory spearheading that. So there's so much to love about Rory. It's disappointing that we can't see him, you know, win a little bit more. That's why I wanted to see this for him today, and it just didn't happen. Let me throw one more at you.
Yeah, the issue with Rory is
go ahead, please.
As I say, the issue with Rory is I just don't know what his legacy is. And I think we discussed this in the past, but I don't know what his legacy is if he doesn't win another major. I'm not sure that, you know, he's a Hall of Fame golfer, but the trajectory he was on, it was hard to imagine he would be a top 5 golfer of all time, or at least top 6, 7, 8. And if it ended right now, major-wise, I don't think he couldn't even come close to making that argument. And that's too bad because, again, like you said, he's really good for the game. He's very well respected among his peers. He's as well known of a golfer as you could think of, aside from Tiger Woods, with our generation. But again, it's the next generation. So are they going to know that name all that well? And I can't say for sure they will.
Couple of last-minute guys to say, good heads up, a tip of the cap to Matt Wolf, a little golf clap to Matt Wolf. You know, mental health is such a tough thing, and it was really clear watching him play at Concession and watching him play in the team event at Zurich and watching him WD from events that he wasn't right mentally, right? That he was having a really tough time with adversity and really struggling with being a lone professional golfer. For him to come out here this week, be as honest about that as he was, which I really give him credit for that, because a lot of guys could just stay quiet about that, not talk about it. For him to actually like cut open a vein, but then also hang in there. I mean, he finished +1, but under major championship pressure to hang in there for a while. He faded today, but to hang in there as long as he did, good job. Good step forward. Golf claps to you, Matt Wolf. Nice work.
Yep, I had that name written down as well. I think he deserves a ton of credit. After his Thursday round, where he obviously the score reflected that he played very well, but all the bogeys worried me, and I was really worried that he was just going to blow up on Friday going forward and maybe not even make the cut. But he hung in there, like you said, and he didn't. I mean, I don't know what the course average was today, but he probably wasn't far off of it. So he faded, but it wasn't a terrible performance by any means. He seemed positive. You know, we got to see a lot of him, not necessarily his shots, but we got to see a lot of him on the back because of who he was playing with. But he just seemed positive, and I think that this really could propel him forward. I don't know enough about Matthew Wolff to say for sure, but I'm guessing he probably hasn't had a ton of struggles in his golf career. He probably has been the top dog a lot. And all of a sudden to fall back into irrelevance a little bit, I think was really hard for him. So he's probably going to be one of those guys that's a little bit boom or bust, but it was boom this week, and it was, yeah, I was really happy for him.
You know what? It really comes down to, I think that's the COVID monster, I think, on Matt Wolff, right? Because Matt Wolff strikes you as the guy who needs to go out after the round and have a beer with the guys and like hang out and shoot the bull and like hang out and just talk it out, right? Go through the round, shot by shot, that kind of guy, right? He couldn't do that for basically the last year and whatever. It's nope, drag your bag to the hotel room, sit in your room, order your food in, COVID protocol test in the morning, no interacting, no talking, no speaking, stay isolated. I just feel like guys like Matt Wolff, that's not, and he's not a married guy, doesn't have kids, so it's not like he can go home to something. The solitary life is not for Matt Wolff. I think we saw that over the last year or so. I think that's a clear case for that.
Yeah, and if you go back to the tape, that seminal round that he played with Dustin Johnson and Rory and was it Ricky? He's clearly a guy who wants to be liked, very social. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think he is one of those guys that needs to be around other people. And we're speculating, but from I think a pretty educated standpoint, because and I don't want to harp on it too much, but I'm gonna the USGA and the administrators of the US Open and the state of California, because even though it seemed like down the stretch there were plenty of fans there, I think it was a little bit of a shame to be at 25% capacity. I know that there were some logistical issues with parking and shuttling over and things like that, but I just think that they should have planned for a larger audience, and if that didn't happen, scale back instead of not planning for it and trying to scramble at the end. I thought that was a little bit of a negative for me. Again, aside from Sunday down the stretch, the crowd seemed very thin and the crowd noise was very low, and I think that that's a little bit of a shame. But yeah, back to Matthew Wolff. I think we'll find out a lot about him before Ryder Cup time, and I don't think that he's done enough to be on the Ryder Cup team, but I'm just setting that as a deadline that I think we're going to learn a lot about him.
Well, all I'd say is, Matt, we want you to come to the 3M Open. We want to make sure that you're here after the British Open. So come here. Come play 3M the week after the Open Championship. The fans here will love you, like as they did 2 years ago. I mean, they loved him up here 2 years ago and really, really embraced him. Come here. The fans are going to, we're going to have pretty much full capacity here at the 3M. And you'll get a big gallery, I promise you. Like a lot of people will come to watch you play, so I hope he does that. Let's talk about the golf course. Yeah, I think the state of California, this is just a bad break for the USGA because I mean I think they love the primetime TV, but I think being in California at the end of this pandemic, I mean if they were three or four states over, they'd have had a they'd have had a full house. It's just the way it goes, and I think next year at the Country Club, like it's going to be incredible. I think no question about that. But yeah, they were done in a little bit. Overall, did the golf course meet, fail, or exceed expectations to you?
I think it was exactly how we called it earlier in the week. There weren't a ton of memorable holes. I think if I went back and asked the average golf fan, "Hey, which holes did you like? Which holes did you not like?" I don't think that they would really be able to even call back, a memorable hole, including 18. I didn't think 18, came through as that memorable. Obviously, there wasn't a photo finish or anything like that, so that doesn't help. But as far as the scoring and the difficulty of the course, I thought that was great. I mean, 6 under for someone who went out and set the world on fire on the last couple holes and made a couple big putts, so that the winning score could have easily been 5 or 4 or 3. I thought that that was very positive, and I thought that they grew up the rough really well. I didn't get the sense that guys were out there breaking their wrists on the rough, but it was damning. I mean, they were, as soon as you were off of the fairway, you were playing for par. Par was pretty much your best case scenario. And then I thought that the green speeds were good. I mean, I want people to be punished when they are too aggressive on putts and when they miss the hole. I want it to go 5 feet past. And I saw a lot of that. So that's, to me, that's US Open golf.
I guess the drawback I have to it is that it played. I heard too many guys say at the end of rounds that it played just like the Farmers, or it plays a lot like the Farmers from tee to green. And I'm like, that's not what I want. I don't want the major championship to play just like a PGA Tour event, which makes me think we need to just not play major championships at PGA Tour venues. Like we just, like I think, with the exception of maybe Pebble Beach. With the exception of Pebble Beach, I think there needs to be a set, like 6-course rota with maybe a seventh as a wild card event where you can mix new courses in on both the PGA Championship and the US Open. I think it's got to be like Oakmont, Pinehurst, Shinnecock, Pebble Beach, and then you throw in whatever you want. If whether it's the Country Club at Brookline or it's Wingfoot or it's, where you decide. What that's going to look like. But I want those good. It's like we have this love affair with the Open Championship. Like we know what we're going to get with the Open every year. And I love that about the Open. The US Open, I want to see some definition to what we're looking for. Right now, I feel like the PGA and the US Open are sort of the same thing. They play the same kind of courses, they do the same sort of things. And I don't want to see that. I want to see some definition between those two championships. And I think it starts with picking venues that we don't get to see all the time. Like, I loved Kiawah, right? I had a great time watching Kiawah. I want to see more of that type of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. They were damned a little bit from the beginning with Torrey Pines because it is a recognizable course, and there's history there, but not a lot of ancient history. And that to me, US Open has tended to go to courses that have been around for 100, 150 years, where they're showing, shots of Hill or hitting shots. There's not a lot of that with Torrey Pines, and a lot of guys are familiar with the course, which is a little bit, boring to me. It's like, hey, this is six guys' home course. They claim that they love this course and play it all the time. I like courses where guys show up and say, they go a few weeks early to play it because, hey, I haven't seen this course maybe ever. That's not the case with Torrey Pines.
I also want to see a mixture of things. I like the long rough, I really do, but I want the green complexes and the areas around it to be really difficult. Like, I want to see some shot making off tight lies and, some shots where you can really see elevation changes, and really perk the greens up on and put them in some really tough spots where they got to make a great chip, or they got to blade a wedge, or they got to putt it off the green, or they've got to hit a hybrid off the green to kind of putt it up there and bump it. I want to see options. I felt like around the green, there were no options. It was, well, you missed the green, you're hacking. And it doesn't give, I just want to see more of that, more shot making at the end. And I think that's the only problem I have with Torrey. But you're right. All the other pieces aligned. We got a great leaderboard. We had a great finish. We had US Open type scoring. All in all, it met expectations, but it did not exceed it.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's one thing that I do like to see, and it's not necessarily a US Open thing, it's more of an Augusta thing, or are the false fronts and the elevated greens where guys can hit, you miss the shot just a little bit, you're a yard away from sticking by the pin, and it comes back down to your feet. There was none of that this week.
Yeah. And
The greens were receptive enough and not really elevated.
I think that's what we love about Augusta, right? Is that there are real elevation issues around the greens, and you got to be really precise at Augusta. And it's not deep rough that punishes guys. It's you got to be you the guys who can't, really control spin with a wedge, and the guys who, whatever, that's the stuff that gets guys at Augusta. And I'm not saying I need that all the time, but like I love that at Pinehurst. Like that's what makes Pinehurst great, is that you got to really do some creative stuff around the greens. And that was what was fun about Kiawah, was like you had to hit some really quality shots like around the greens and hit some different wedges, and you had some, it was pot luck with the lies. Sometimes it was a really tight lie, sometimes you were in some sand, sometimes you were in some thick bushes. I like that. I want options around the green, and I'm in on that stuff. Like I really am. I want to see more of that as we go forward. So we do have one more major left. We have the Open Championship in 4 weeks. Between now and then, what's something that you're interested to find out? What's a storyline that you're looking for here over the next 4 weeks as we head into that?
For me, it's all Ryder Cup, right? Because we're certainly not in the ninth inning of the Ryder Cup race, but that's pretty much in a Ryder Cup year where we really do not know who the team's going to be. And, you know, obviously you're not very confident that the Americans have much of a chance, but it's going to come down to who makes the team. I mean, I think that we're going to look back, whether we win or lose, and say that it probably had a lot to do with those depth guys, because if we can find kind of a lightning rod type player to skirt in, I don't know who it is. It's certainly not Tony Finau, you know, it's not Xander Schauffele. It's probably one of these young guys that we're not even, that we're penciling into the team and not throwing the Sharpie on it. So that's really what I'm focused on right now is majors and Ryder Cup race. And that's the beauty again of a Ryder Cup year is every week matters. So
that's what we'll. I think that's a good spot for it. Ty, I 100% agree. The Ryder Cup, the Olympics, the British Open. That's where we're going heading forward here. When we get into our picks this week for the Travelers Championship, which actually is a fun tournament. I really like the Travelers. I think it's going to be a fun tournament. I'm interested to see what the field looks like there when you consider it's cross country and you consider it's a kind of a short notice thing. But it's drawn a really good field over the last handful of years and has produced some really fun tournaments. So I'm kind of excited for it. When we make our picks for the Travelers, there's a lot of stuff we got to get to. So this next week pod is going to be amazing. We're going to talk green reading books. We're going to talk Ryder Cup. We're going to talk, oh, by the way, I tested an arm lock putter for the first time. So we got to talk about that because I did putt an arm lock putter, and I'm just going to start with this. They need to be banned. 100%. I made 5 in a row. I picked it up for the first time ever, and I made 5 putts in a row from 12 feet with an arm lock putter. They have to be banned. That's all there is to it. Anyway, we'll talk about that and make our picks for the Travelers starting next week. Tyus, thanks for jumping in with us on a Sunday night. Anything else you want to add before we head out?
Nope, that's it. It was a fun tournament. U.S. Opens always are. It was, you know, we didn't have the Tiger Rocco Mediate finish, but you know what? I just love watching golf.
That's
love
fantastic. Golf. Happy Father's Day to you. I know that you went out and had to do a lot of stuff with that today, and I hope it went well for you. Good job by you. Happy Father's Day to all the dads. I'm not one of them, so this is just a Sunday for me. But say hello to, of course, my old man as well. Happy Father's Day to him and everybody else. So thanks for tuning into the pod, the post-game pod. We'll do one more of these after the Open Championship and then another one after the Ryder Cup. So we've got some stuff going on here. Ty and I will be back later this week to break down the Travelers and all that other fun stuff. So thanks again for listening. Continue to subscribe. Consider to like, to share, to do all of that stuff. We appreciate you wherever you get your podcasts. So until next time, this is Tim saying keep your head up, and we'll see you.